Okay, good morning. As I said in the email, we're going to spend about an hour on discussing protocol analysis. So we're going to be looking at medium access control protocols. And again, how do you analyze them using statistics and probability? And then after that, we'll have a break, and the second half of this session will be devoted to a sort of quick tutorial on the assignment. Okay, so I've been getting sort of a number of questions which fall into sort of various categories. So I've asked the demonstrator to come in and have a talk about, you know, sort of some of these issues which are sort of high level, they're design issues, or sort of how do I interpret the data that I've got in issues. And in addition, after that, if you have any sort of specific questions for him, you know, my code's not working, and could you help me sort it out, he'll be available for that as well. Okay. So, we're going to look at sort of a very specific slice of network protocols, as I said, the medium access control protocols. Why? Well, because they do apply to a huge number of networks out there. The most obvious, of course, are local area networks, but also to sort of various flavors of metropolitan area networks and sort of very specific components of wide area networks as well. Okay, so the main reference for this is Hammond and O'Reilly, which was published in 1986, which is quite a while ago for any sort of technology. But the reason we picked this is because obviously it does do all this analysis in nice detail. And what you'll find is that if you look at the numbers, the numbers that are picked for the networks are out of date. Like he's talking about, you know, high-speed networks of 56 kilobits per second and things like that. But the basic methodology, the basic ways in which links are shared and computer and users get access to the networks hasn't actually changed that much since then. There's only a few ways that you can do this, and they were all pretty much defined in the 80s and analyzed in the 80s, so the numbers change, but the approach to examining them doesn't. Okay. And I've specifically referenced chapters 5, 7, and 8. Chapter 5 is sort of a general discussion of medium access. Chapters 7 and 8 deal with the analysis of polling networks and token ring networks, respectively. So those are, and that's pretty much what we're going to concentrate on today, is these polling networks and token networks. And they, you'll see that they behave quite similarly. Okay. So we're talking, again, about medium access. And so what do we mean by that? Well, if you look at the data link layer, what it is trying to do is to establish a point-to-point connection between two, what we're going to call here, stations. Okay. So I have data, I want to transmit it to another station, and I can do that if I have a link between myself and that other station. Okay. This, again, is contrasted to me on my laptop trying to transmit data to China. There's no way I can do that with one direct link. Okay. So, again, the type of networks that this impacts on are local area networks, and also to some extent sort of the edges of networks. So you could also lump access, radio access networks into this as well, because a lot of these same ideas have spilled over into the idea of radio channel allocation as well. Okay. So, we want to have a connection between one station and another, and so that's grand if you string a wire between those two stations, or that's not used by anybody else. But in general, whatever connection you have is probably going to be shared not just by those two stations, but by a number of stations as well. Okay, so again, this is the local area network scenario. You've connected up 5, 10, 20, 100 stations, and at one level they all have point-to-point connections, but the way you implement those connections means that in general they're sharing that connection amongst themselves. Okay, so the question then becomes, how do you share this connection? And again, there are pretty much three techniques you can use, and that covers it. After that, you can have permutations, you can try and combine the techniques, etc., but pretty much any system will use one of these three techniques. Okay. So the first thing you can do is you've got a single connection. Well, you can divide it up into sub-connections, and as long as you can make enough divisions, then you can essentially get back to the point, to the stage where you have a point-to-point connection. Okay, so this is the idea of multiplexing. And so you can either divide your time up into slots and give each connection a specific slot, or you can divide your frequency up and give each connection a specific frequency. Okay. Now, from a performance point of view, this is great because it means that you're not really introducing any overhead or any delay, but there is a limit to, again, how many of these divisions you can make, and therefore that puts a severe limit onto how many connections you can have under this sort of an arrangement. Okay. So if you want to accommodate more than you can have for by dividing up your channel and not sharing, the other option is that you have to share your channel. If you're sharing your channel, then obviously only one connection can use the channel at any given time. And so that's going to introduce a delay potentially. If two connections have data to send, well, if only one can use it at a time, the one that's not using it is experiencing extra delay. And that's what we're going to be looking at today, is how you decide sort of how much delay this a sharing mechanism is imposing on your system. Okay. And so there are pretty much two ways you can do the sharing. The first is in a very polite, orderly fashion, a reservation-based fashion. And in this case, you implement some sort of turn-taking mechanism so that stations will transmit when it's their turn and won't transmit if it's not their turn. Okay. And that's what we're going to look at today. We're going to look at two flavors of this. We're going to look at a centralized control mechanism, which is polling. So there's a central controller that is going to control all of this sharing. Or the other option is that you can have a distributed control mechanism, in which case you have a special token, and the stations themselves regulate the sharing by passing the token around. A station takes the token, it transmits its data, it releases the token, the next one takes, then you can get the token, transmit its data, release the token. Okay. In terms of analysis, that's actually quite, the analysis of these two types of schemes is actually quite similar. Again, the differences are in the implementation, and whether you have this centralized controller or not. The final mechanism, which is quite common, is a contention-based mechanism, which allows stations to more or less transmit at will, and then if two stations transmit at once, they have to have some mechanism. The stations will realize that two stations are transmitting at once, and they have to have some mechanism of sorting out then who goes, who actually gets to transmit. And that mechanism is, in turn, quite random. Okay. So, that sort of a setup is sort of radically different, and is sort of the analysis of it is significantly different, and we'll look at that next week. Okay. So, again, this is just a summary. We're looking at primarily the medium access control layer of the protocol stack, which is the link layer, and the largest family of examples for these protocols are the 802.2. The IEEE 802 family, and those essentially try and describe all of the possible setups you can have for local and medium area networks. Okay, and so we have everything from 802.3, which is a contention-based scheme, to 4, 5, and 6, are token-based schemes. Then you have sort of different physical layers and interfaces for those physical layers, and more recently getting into wireless as well. Okay. And the 802 protocols sort of lump the MAC layer together with the physical layer. And on top of that, they've got sort of an error control layer to try and make sure that your data actually gets there correctly. But we're going to, again, concentrate on all these sharing schemes. And we're not going to look at any specific protocol because, again, they're all going to use more or less some flavor of polling, token, or contention resolution. Okay. So, one thing that I sort of thought about when, sort of deciding to actually cover this topic was, is this analysis still really relevant? Again, I think contention resolution is pretty still pretty common. A lot of stuff has gone to switched, so where you actually do allocate resources, so that doesn't really fall into the remit of what we're talking about today. And so the question was primarily, do people still use polling networks, and do they still use token rings? And the answer is pretty much, well, yes. Perhaps not in the local area network area, but in sort of some specific sort of specialized networks, some of which, well, I should, actually some of which are local area networks. Okay, so examples of where polling is still used. The 802.11 PCF point control function uses it, although, again, that might not be the greatest example since it's not very frequently implemented. In general, a contention-based scheme is thought to be good enough. Bluetooth definitely uses it. Bluetooth sets up these master-slave relationships between devices, which are essentially a controlling entity and then a bunch of other devices that seek to communicate through this controlling entity, and the communication is still arranged via polling networks. And also, sort of on a wider scale, in passive optical networks, so depending on what architecture is proposed for an optical network, frequently the allocation scheme for resources within the network is done via polling. Within the radio access control sphere, whether it's implemented or not, and sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't, a lot of proposals for how you provide quality of service within within the radio sphere involve polling, which again shouldn't be surprising. If you want to provide a certain bandwidth, you can't really use a contention-based scheme. You have to have some turn-taking mechanism. And again, if you think about access points, well, you might as well use something with a central controller since your access point provides a central controller. Okay, token rings are probably not quite as common. The few things that might still be around, again, there are proposals for various optical ring architectures which would use transmission schemes that look rather like tokens, token passing. And the FDDI protocol is still used in some sort of backbone networks, so it is still there, although probably not as common. Okay. And again, contention resolution schemes are still quite popular. Okay. So what are we going to try to determine for these sorts of networks? Well, as I said before, you can view performance from two different perspectives. One is from the network perspective. The network just wants to see essentially how many packets it can push through at any given time, how fast it can get them through, etc. And then from the user perspective, well, the user actually is probably a bit more concerned about any single packet. What sort of delay does any single packet experience? Because it could be that the way to get a lot of packets through a network is to totally ignore one user, maybe. In which case, from that user's perspective, you know, the performance is going to be terrible. Maybe it's excellent as far as the network is concerned. Now, so we're going to look at sort of a very few specific measures. We're going to look at throughput. And you can generically look at end users in the sense of sort of on average how many packets does the user get through in a fixed amount of time. Again, this is not going to deal with things on a packet-by-packet basis. More likely, again, you look at it from the network perspective of overall, you know, I don't care if I have 10, 20, 30 users on, how many packets am I moving around the network? Okay. Now, if we think of having an arrival rate of lambda, then hopefully our network is stable. So hopefully that our network is able to at least eventually handle all the packets that are coming in. And if the network is stable, then the rate at which packets enter the network is the rate at which they exit the network as well. Okay. So the throughput is given by lambda. Now, throughout the notes, we'll also be looking at normalized throughput. And again, this is the term used by Hammond and O'Reilly. Probably these days it would more commonly be referred to as efficiency. Okay. And efficiency is a measure of how busy does the network stay. So what percentage of time is the network doing useful work? Okay. And so what is this relative to? Well, it has to be relative to the transmission speed of the packets. Okay. So also the maximum amount, the sort of maximum flow through the network can't be any greater than the transmission speed. Okay. So we normalize our throughput, which was given by lambda, by this transmission speed. Okay. And so, again, what this does is it gives you a measure of sort of what percentage of the time the network is spending transmitting packets versus what time is it, well, idle is probably incorrect, but what amount of time is it doing something other than just transmitting the packets? Okay. Okay, so now returning to a packet side view, a packet level view, the transfer delay refers to the time it takes for a packet to arrive at a station and then arrive at its destination. Okay. And so this time has a number of components. If there are multiple packets needing to be transmitted by the station, well, in general, the packet's going to queue on a first-come, first-served basis. The packet has to physically traverse whatever medium there is, whatever connection there is. It has to be transmitted. And at various stages, it's going to have to be processed. Okay. And so the some time is spent just deciding what to do with it. Or sort of down at physical layer, trying to synchronize and make sure you can receive it. Okay. So that would be the delay experienced by any given packet. Obviously, what we're concerned with then is going to be the average delay that packets will experience. And this delay can be normalized over the packet transmission time as well. And so if T is your transfer delay, then T hat is your normalized transfer delay. Okay, so As I said, today we're going to take a look at throughput and delay for turn-taking mechanisms, so polling networks, and if we get to it, we'll also look at ring networks. Again, they're quite similar. If we don't, we'll take that up next time as well. So what exactly is a polling network? Well, again, it's a network in which there is a central controller and all communication goes through that central controller, and the central controller enforces a turn-taking mechanism. Okay. So essentially the central controller tells station one, it's its turn to transmit. When station one is done, the central controller detects that, tells station two it's their turn to transmit, etc. Okay. And so, and additionally, again, the central controller is used to relay the information. So if, when I say the station sends information, what I mean is that it sends it to the central controller, and then the central controller can relay that information back out to its final destination. Okay. We assume we have a duplex connection, so the transmission of data to the central controller and then the transmission, the relaying out can be done in parallel. So obviously what happens with a turn-taking mechanism like this is that in between turns, packets will accumulate at each of the stations, and that's what will cause sort of delays, is the accumulation of packets sort of both at a station and waiting for the accumulation of packets to be processed for each station. Okay. Now, this is a bit of a subtle difference. It's an implementation issue, which again would have slight performance impact. There's basically two types of polling. One is roll call polling and the second is hub polling. And again, with roll call polling, this turn-taking mechanism is enforced by the controller in the way that I've discussed so far. Just like they tell one station it's their turn, then when that turn is up, they tell the next station that it's their turn, etc. Now, hub polling sort of tries to make it a little more efficient by speeding up the turn-taking process. And the way it does this is that now each station signals the end of its turn, but there is a monitoring link between all of the stations that allows all of the stations to detect when that turn is ended. Okay. And so an additional piece of information is added onto the end signal, which is what the next station should be. And so instead of the central controller having to receive the end signal and relay it back out to the next station, that processing time and waiting time is removed, and the station itself can detect when the end came and start its transmission itself. Okay. But communication still is all relayed through this central controller. So it's almost like a halfway point between what we'll see with a token ring and a genuine polling situation. Okay. We're specifically going to concentrate on roll call polling, so where everything is controlled by the central controller. Okay, so, again, there's a number of points where overhead enters into this. If we look at this sort of list of what exactly happens, only at one point, Station I transmits all of its backlog messages to the central computer for distribution. Only at that point is sort of useful transmission going on. This is the only time where actual packet transmission is going on. At the rest of the times, what's going on is work that needs to be done in order to enable this useful transmission, but work which is essentially overhead, so it's time that's not spent transmitting packets. Okay, and it's a combination here of, again, handling the poll, so time that's explicitly involved with this turn-taking mechanism. So the turn-taking mechanism takes time out of the system, and also sort of lower level considerations which have to do with packet processing, such as synchronization. Okay. And so our efficiency and throughput are going to be dependent on the ratio of transmission time to the overall time that the system takes transmitting the packets. Okay. So we make a number of assumptions now about how the system is set up. And again, these are primarily so that we can come up with an analytical solution. And so we assume that we have Poisson arrival statistics and that each station has packets arriving in a Poisson fashion at a rate of lambda per packets per second. We lump all of our overhead, all of the extra time that's not spent transmitting packets, into this factor called a walk time. And so this walk time is the time it takes to transfer the poll from one station to the next and establish the connection between that station and the centralized controller. Okay, so it's sort of the setup time. Anytime you have the poll, then it's going to take a certain amount of time to move the poll from one station to another, set up the connection between that station and the controller so that the data can be transmitted. Okay. Now, what we assume is that this walk time is constant and the same for every station. Okay. And our final assumption is that the packets, they're not only are they arriving at the station in more or less the same fashion, but the types of packets that are arriving are similar, so the packet lengths have the same distribution. Okay. So obviously it could be that this station's getting really long packets, this one's getting really short packets, but we're assuming that no, they're all not the same length, but the length is distributed in the same way. Okay. So, as we said, this is a turn-taking mechanism. Station 1 gets their turn, Station 2 gets their turn, Station 3 gets their turn, Station N gets their turn, or so I should say Station M, since we're going to assume we have M stations, and then we're back to Station 1. So what this means is that we can concentrate on one typical period. So we can look at what happens between the time Station 1 has its turn, and so then all the other stations have their turn, and then it returns back to Station 1. Okay. So this typical period is called a cycle, and one thing that we can define for it is, on average, how long is this cycle? Okay, and we call that the cycle time TC. So that's the what's the average amount of time it takes to let all of the stations transmit once? Okay. And so if we can determine sort of how many packets get transmitted during that cycle time, then we have our throughput and efficiency. Okay. In order to determine how many packets get transmitted, we need to know something about the queue lengths for each station. Okay. And so those two factors give us something, we find out something about the network. And they also factor into the waiting time, which again is down to what the packets experience. So on average, how long is it going to take for a packet to arrive at the station to the time it actually gets transmitted? Okay. Now, and then we have our transfer delay, which is the time from when it arrives to its delivery to our central computer. In the case of polling networks, we aren't as concerned about the actual transfer delay because we assume that once the packet that gets transmitted, they all take sort of a fixed length of time to reach the central computer. And so we don't worry about what that fixed length of time is. We just assume it's constant and don't worry about it. Okay. Now, this final factor, response time, sort of closes the cycle in terms of the packet sender, in the sense that the response time is the time from when the packet arrives to the time that it's acknowledged by the sender. Okay. And I mentioned this just because this sort of a factor is dependent not only on the protocols that we're examining here, but it's also dependent on higher layer protocols. It's dependent on your link layer protocols. So how do you generate acknowledgments? How do you handle errors, etc.? All of that's going to factor into components like response times. So the moral of the story there is that we can do all this nice analysis, but it's in the context of a broader system, and it might not be answering sort of all the questions that you need to have answered. Okay, so now we'll grind through the maths for this. Okay, so NM is the average number of packets stored at a station when the poll arrives. X bar is the average packet length, and R is the average transmission speed. Okay. So, X bar over R is the packet transmission time. Now, if you think about queuing, then this was your service time. If you were looking at a system where you're transmitting packets, then X bar over R could be equated to mu. Okay. Now, if we know on average, or if we know exactly how many packets are in a queue, we know the amount of time it's going to take to empty that queue. Specifically, it's the number of packets times the time it takes to serve or process or transmit the packets. Okay. After that, we have our walk time. So after we've transmitted all our packets, the poll needs to be transferred to the next station. So we have a bit of wasted time in the form of this walk time. Okay. So this is enough to give us our cycle time. Our cycle time is comprised of the amount of time it takes to transmit our packets plus the amount of time it takes to transfer the poll. And in a cycle, that is done for each station. So if we have M stations, which I don't think I actually wrote there, M is the number of stations we have. And so our cycle is, again, the time it takes to serve each station in turn. Okay. And again, we can see that part of this time is useful in the sense that we're transmitting packets. Part of it is, well, you can't say it's not useful because it's necessary, but it's overhead in the sense that we're not actually transmitting packets. Okay. So, we have a bit of a cycle going here. We would like to calculate our cycle time. In order to do this, we need to know, on average, how many packets are present at any given station when the poll comes. But, again, circularly, the number of packets present is obviously dependent on the cycle time, on how long it takes for the poll to arrive each time. Okay. So, fortunately for us, we have one equation involving TC and NM, and we can also appeal to Little's law to relate TC and NM in a different and independent way, and that allows us to, you know, we have two equations, two unknowns we can solve. Okay. So, what Little's law says is that the average queue length is lambda times the waiting time, or so what we can do is combine our two equations for NM and TC. And so here what we'll do is we'll plug in our Little's law definition for NM and solve for TC. Okay, and so we get out of a solution for TC fairly quickly. Okay. So that's good. Once we have TC, we can figure out NM, etc. And once we have TC, we can start looking at the waiting time. So how much time does any given packet spend waiting? Before we do that, we're going to take a little more in-depth look at TC, and in particular, we're going to relate it to our normalized throughput, S, or, again, remember that that normalized throughput is equivalent to efficiency. Okay, so it's the percentage of time the network is spending doing useful work. Okay. And so, plugging in, we see that S plugs in here at the bottom, and we get that our cycle time is MW over 1 minus S. And if you sit down and think about it, that makes good intuitive sense, okay? Now, MW is our overhead factor. So you have a walk time for each station, and so if you look at all of the stations combined, then you have M of those walk times. Okay, so that's essentially the amount of wasted time. Now, what does 1 over S give us? Well, if S is the proportion of useful time, then 1 over S is the proportion of wasted time. Okay. So if you have the amount of wasted time and the proportion of wasted time in the whole cycle, obviously that gives you your cycle time altogether. Okay. Now, we can look at, again, the amount of waiting time that is experienced by a given packet. So, a packet arrives, and at some later time, while the station is actually transmitting, at the next opportunity when the station can transmit the packets, the packet departs. And so this overall time between packet arrival and packet departure is our waiting time, W. And we're going to consider the two components of this waiting time separately. There's a time spent waiting while the station is not transmitting. Okay, so that's the time that other stations are transmitting their packets. And that's, we refer to that as W1. And then even when the pole is transferred, you don't get sort of instant, or a given packet isn't going to get instantaneous service because there's a backlog of packets, and so it's somewhere in that backlog. And W2 reflects, well, the average amount of time that the packet is waiting when the station is actually transmitting. Okay. So, we'll have a look at both of those figures in turn. Okay, so the first waiting time can be calculated as a proportion of the overall cycle time. So we can split our cycle time up into two figures. There's the portion where the station is not transmitting and the portion where the station is transmitting. Okay. Now, we know the overall amount of time that the station transmits. This is given by NM, the number of packets to be transmitted, times the packet transmission time. Using Little's law again, we can translate that in terms of NM equals lambda TC. Okay. Now, our efficiency term, we can split up according to how many stations there are. So, if all of the stations or all of the useful time is in a proportion of S, then each individual station gets a fraction S over M of that. Okay. And so the amount of time that any given station gets service is in proportion to this rho, so this fraction times TC. Okay. So, in terms of W1, what we're looking at is the 1 minus rho TC period, the period where we're not transmitting. And we just observe that it's equally likely that a packet is going to arrive at any point in that interval. Okay. So, on average, we say that it arrives halfway through the interval. Okay. So, our W1 is given by TC, 1 minus rho, divided by 2, so halved. Okay. And so we can substitute in our figure for TC to get a W1 that's not dependent on TC, which is dependent on factors that we are given. Okay. And so we get we get a term for W1 just again by substituting in our value for TC. Now, W2 is a bit more complicated. Okay, so to determine W2, we're trying to determine, sort of again, what the waiting time in the queue is while we're actually getting service. So what we do is we look at the network, but we get rid of the walk times. Okay. So we say, let's assume that in the network we're always transmitting packets. We don't have any of this overhead. By looking at that figure, we should be able to see on average how long it takes to clear a given packet. Okay. Now, the arrival rate, if we've gotten rid of these walk times, we have an MG1Q. So we have all these arrival streams, lambda. So the overall arrival rate is M lambda. We think of having a single server. And we don't know our actual service distribution. Okay. Now, I'm going to refer you forward and just say that you're going to look at these MG1Qs and the waiting times for these MG1Qs in a little while, okay? So after these protocol analysis lectures, you're going to return to more queuing analysis and you'll look at MG1Qs. But we have a specific result that says that we can calculate the average waiting time for an MG1 queue. Okay. And we say that that waiting time is equivalent to the waiting time for our packets. And again, we can manipulate results so that they're in terms of these either the efficiency or the packet transmission time. Okay. So the total waiting time then is just the sum of these two factors. And again, you sort of in whatever final format you want to put it. What we do see here is that it's dependent on the second moment of the packet length, and or you could also argue the second moment of the service time. Okay. And so in order to get an actual answer out, again, you're going to need to know what this second moment is. Okay. And so we could do this for any sort of well-defined distribution. In our case, we're going to look at two different distributions. We're going to look at a constant distribution, in which case the second moment is just x squared. Constant. Why doesn't that? Okay, and yeah, that is right. We can look at the exponential distribution, in which case the second moment is also fairly simple in the sense that it is 2x squared. And again, we can plug that in. And we now have, in either of these cases, we have a waiting time that is dependent on, the number of stations, our walk time, which is constant, and we assume we know our efficiency, which we've calculated, and then our average packet length. Okay. So that gives you the packet delay. So that's the time it takes from the packet arriving at the station to the packet beginning transmission. we can also look at transfer delay, which would be the time that it additionally took the packet to arrive at the central controller. But again, in this case, we assume that for all packets, the average transmission time is going to be the same, and the propagation time is going to be the same. So it doesn't, it's not particularly interesting to add on those factors. So there's no particular work into adding on those factors. Okay. Now, that's pretty much all we're going to have time for today in terms of sort of meaty analysis. I will just introduce the setup of a token ring, and again, we'll have to take up the analysis next lecture. Okay. So polling networks, they have this centralized controller. Everything runs through the centralized controller, and the controller takes care of the turn-taking mechanism. For token rings, there is no centralized control. The stations themselves have to organize the turn-taking mechanism. Okay. And so, in general, it's a ring because that is how the stations are physically arranged. They're connected in a ring fashion, and we assume that the transmission goes around in one direction along the ring. Okay. And so there's two possibilities for a station. Either it's transmitting its packets, or it's forwarding somebody else's packets. Okay. And there's a small delay built into this forwarding mechanism to allow stations to examine the packets as they're being forwarded along. And for instance, if it's a token, that will allow the station to seize the token fairly efficiently. Okay. So how does a token work? Well, basically the token is a specialized packet that's transmitted around the ring. When a station has data to transmit, it waits to see a free token. It changes that free token into a busy token and then transmits its packets. And then at some time after the packet transmission, and there's a few variations on exactly when, but sometime after it finishes transmitting its packets, it then releases the token. It changes the token back into its free state. Okay. So there's two possibilities for the transmission of packets. There's exhaustive service, so the station transmits all the packets it has and then releases the token. Or non-exhaustive service, in which case each station is limited to transmitting a fixed number of bits or packets anytime it captures the token. Okay. The exhaustive service case makes it quite similar to our polling network setup. In the sense, you get your turn, you send all your data, then the next person gets their turn, they send all their data, etc. Okay. The non-exhaustive case is slightly different. The advantage of the non-exhaustive case is that it means that there is an upper bound on the cycle time for the network. Okay. If you think about exhaustive service, with some sort of decreasing probability, the cycle time can get larger and larger and larger. If you say, well, everybody has to take a turn of at most a fixed duration, then obviously that upper bounds the cycle time. arguably, if the ring is not heavily loaded, then the two modes operate more or less equivalently. So if, in general, your queues aren't getting too high, then you can assume that you would have cleared them in whatever your fixed time limit was anyway. Okay. In terms of analysis, again, we're going to take a look at the exhaustive service case. Okay, so similar factors affect the performance of token rings. We have a delay just in transiting around the ring. Now, again, depending where the package is going, it may or may not transit completely around the ring anyway, but we define the ring latency as the time it does take to travel all completely around the ring. Again, there's a slight delay at the stations as they examine the packets and forward the packets. Okay, then we have our useful time, our packet transmission time. And now we have, and again we have a token transfer delay. Okay, and again, depending what flavor of policy you're looking at, and we'll go over what the possibilities are in a second, this delay is more or less. But what we'll see is that analytically, the easiest place to incorporate this delay is actually into the packet transmission times. So, in general, things are going to look the same as the polling network, but whereas the walk time would have been fixed, our packet, our token transfer time now is not constant, so instead of trying to sort of analyze it separately, it gets lumped into the transmission times to calculate delays, etc. Okay. And so the final thing I will say today is just about the different modes of operation of rings. And again, this is this waffle about when do we release tokens. And there are three modes: multiple token, single token, and single packet. And to see what each of them does, in multiple token operation, a station releases the token immediately after it finishes transmission. Okay, so if we look at this example, station one, in the first thing, will capture that token because it wants to transmit. It sets the token to busy and transmits its packets, and then immediately after that, it releases the token. So if station two also wants to transmit, it can capture the now released token and transmit its packets, and then again immediately release the token. Okay. And there's a couple of implications of this. One is that it's much more efficient for your transmissions. You can immediately, each station can immediately start transmitting. And also, but on the complicated side, there can be a number of busy tokens and one free token circling around the ring at any given time. Okay. In single token operations, well, as the name implies, we only allow a single token to be transiting the ring. And this is accomplished by requiring that the station that sees the token and did the transmission only releases the token after it has received it back. So the token has to cycle all the way around the network before it gets released. Okay. And so this leads to a bit of a complication analytically, in the sense that there's two possibilities. The first is if the transmission time is less than the propagation time, well, you have an additional delay then as the token propagates around the network. And the second is that second case is that if the transmission is long, it takes longer to transmit the packet than it takes for it to propagate around the network, Well, you have to hold off on transmitting your free token until you've finished your packet transmission. Finally, sort of arguably the simplest and least efficient policy is single packet operation. And single packet operation allows at most one packet to be on the network at any given time. And this is enforced by requiring that a station that transmits a packet will not release the token until it receives its packet back again and takes it off the ring. Okay. So in this case, you have at most one packet transiting around the ring, and it's going to lead to a fixed delay of the time it takes the packet to transit around the ring. Okay, so we'll look at the analysis of these next week. By and large, we can reuse our results from the polling networks. The only complication is, again, this token transfer time, which we end up having to lump into our service time, and you have to be a bit careful about how you do that. So we'll take a break now, and Danielle should be here at 10:30, and again, he'll talk to you a bit about your assignments. So if you've got everything all done and sorted, then you're done for the day. Otherwise, you might want to hang around.